This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, many unanswered questions about the couple involved in a deadly California shooting. The U.S. and China combat cybercrime. Copper kills germs.
They found that copper alloys gave a 58% reduction in infection rate. So that showed, you know, that in the real world of a hospital environment, that copper alloys do a great job.
Country music hears from a brand new star. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. The husband and wife attackers who shot to death 14 people and wounded 21 others at a California holiday party fired as many as 75 shots in the horrific rampage. Police say they left behind a remote-controlled toy car rigged with three pipe bombs that failed to detonate. San Bernardino, California Police Chief Jared Burgon said the couple, Saeed Rizwan Farouk, a 28-year-old American-born local government health inspector, and his 27-year-old Pakistani wife, Tashfeen Malik, escaped in a rented sport utility vehicle on Wednesday. That was before police killed them in a violent gun battle 3 kilometers away on a street in the nearby town of Redlands. 12 pipe bombs were also discovered in the couple's home, along with bomb-making materials and several thousand rounds of ammunition. Investigators say it is too soon to say whether it's a case of domestic or international terrorism. Neither shooter was known to have a criminal record, and they were not on any watch list. The case, once again, is bringing some to blame the Muslim community. For reaction, International Edition Susan Yaki spoke to Ibrahim Hooper of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations.
We just don't know what the motive is at this point, and I think it's premature to even speculate. We held a news conference in our Los Angeles office in which we condemned the tragic killing of all of those people. It's just horrific and just unfathomable. We just, and then we offered condolences to those who were killed and injured, to their loved ones. We just join with all Americans in mourning after this horrific incident.
It seems like when we have these cases here in the United States, the Muslim community is often quickly blamed with some connection.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing we see. If there's a mass shooting by anyone, if they're not Muslim, it is treated one way, and if they are Muslim, it's treated another way. So that's unfortunately what we just have to deal with in kind of the post 9/11 era.
Does CARE have any information about either of these suspects?
No, the family had contacted our office, you know, after they appeared to be suspects, and that's why we held the news conference with one of the relatives, but we don't have any other information than anyone else has.
Do you have any appeal to make to Americans?
Well, I think we're like all Americans. We're revolted by this kind of violence. We're here being citizens just like anybody else, trying to do the best we can for our family and for our society. And you shouldn't generalize to an entire faith community based on the actions of a few individuals.
Ibrahim Hooper, Communications Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations, speaking with International Edition Susan Yaki. President Obama ordered American flags on government buildings, embassies, and military installations flown at half-staff until Monday to honor the shooting victims. The United States and China held high-ranking talks this week aimed at furthering cooperation in combating cybercrime. The U.S. Justice Department issued a statement on the results of the first-ever U.S.-China high-level joint dialogue on cybercrimes and related issues. The two sides reached agreement on guidelines for requesting assistance on cybercrime or other malicious cyber activities. They also agreed to enhance cooperation in combating such cybercrimes as child exploitation, theft of trade secrets, fraud and misuse of technology, and communications for terrorist activities. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ai describes details of the talks With International Edition, Sarah Williams.
We've had statements that have come out at the end of the talks that give us kind of a broad overview of the areas where they're going to try to forge forward and cooperate more, particularly in the area of combating cyber crime. They agreed to hold what's called a tabletop exercise in the spring of next year. And basically that's an exercise that goes through cyber scenarios where you look at how both sides would respond. They made some progress on the establishment of a hotline mechanism, but it's unclear to me, at least, what this actually means, whether they're still not to that where they have the hotline set up. Also, they agreed that they would hold talks, another round of these talks in June of next year in Beijing. But that's what was mentioned in some of the highlights, basic highlights of what was mentioned in the statement. One of the most interesting things, I think, that has come up is that Xinhua has kind of inadvertently mentioned that that China, for the first time, has admitted that it was involved or that Chinese hackers were involved in the attack on the Office of Personnel Management in the United States.
Yes, that has been so controversial here in the U.S. And there have been talks between U.S. President Barack Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping, I believe, when the Chinese leader visited the U.S. in September about this. I mean, the fact that the Chinese admit to this, how do we go from here as far as the future and to try to prevent future cyber attacks?
Well, I think for starters, what they've done is they've admitted that criminal hackers were involved, and they've said that if state actors weren't involved. So they've kind of tried to distance themselves. I think this possibly creates a little bit of breathing room for the both sides. But one of the key things that was done during these talks this week was individual cases of cyber attacks were discussed. The statements on both sides don't give any details on, which cases were discussed. But I think, the admitting of this will help them to an extent to try to make some progress forward. And it does seem, at least from the statements, that they are making some serious headway towards finding ways to cooperate and better understand one another in an area that has been highly contentious and a serious point of friction between the two countries.
And it also should be noted that the talks were co-chaired by the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch and Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson, along with the Chinese State Councilor Guo Shangkun. I mean, it's very high-level personnel were involved in this.
Yes, very high level. And the fact that, this follows up the state visit by Xi Jinping earlier this year in September. It shows that the Chinese government is very serious about this. And, in our work on this story, one analyst that we spoke with, was pointing out how what we're seeing happening now highlights how the Chinese government is really trying to, or at least more aware of the sensitivities of the U.S. government and how serious and how big of an issue, this is for the U.S. government. And at least it appears that both sides in China, for its part, is making more of an effort. Now, when it comes to the case of the criminal hackers who are involved, according to China, we also know from the Washington Post that sources involved, with the meetings had told the Washington Post that these hackers actually have already been arrested. But typical to these kinds of things in China, we know very little about those who are involved. And because of that, then we do not know whether they have any connections to the government as well.
VOA's Beijing correspondent William Ide speaking with International Edition Sarah Williams. At the United Nations Climate Change Conference outside Paris, participants can make up for the greenhouse gases they produced in getting there by giving money to a power plant in Chile. It may sound strange, but it is all part of a UN-backed system aimed at helping developing countries reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. VOA's Steve Barragona explains.
Conference organizers have worked hard to reduce the carbon footprint of the event. Recycled wood is everywhere. Hybrid buses shuttle participants around. But 40,000 people have descended on Paris for the meeting. Most of them flew, burning fossil fuels that create carbon dioxide, notes UN Climate Change Secretariat sustainability expert Niklas Svenningsen.
It would be ironic if you have a climate conference to reduce emissions, and what you actually do is that you increase them.
So meetinggoers are encouraged to log on to climateneutralnow.org. There's a calculator to compute an individual's share of the carbon dioxide produced by their plane ride. The next step? Go shopping for offsets. The system is based on a controversial concept. The idea is that someone who puts greenhouse gases into the atmosphere can pay someone somewhere else to take them out or not to produce them. The most familiar version is planting trees to soak up carbon dioxide. Climate Neutral Now shoppers can choose from that one and more, Svenningsen says.
You have everything from efficient lighting, sustainable transport, renewable energy, industrial technology efficiency, methane recovery from waste.
For example, Svenningsen says the Nueva Alda biomass power plant in Chile would not have been built without carbon offset funds.
This could, for example, be a coal-fired plant instead. So the difference is that I actually have a clean energy plant instead of a fossil fuel plant.
So choose a project, put a couple tons of CO2 offsets in your shopping cart, check out with a credit card or PayPal, and your greenhouse gas emissions are canceled out. Offsetting a round-trip flight from Washington only costs $3.50. But critics say it's hard to calculate exactly whether these offset programs really do what they advertise. The field has seen problems with sketchy accounting. Opponents say UN funds sometimes go to heavily polluting industries, and some projects have done more harm than good, like tree plantations that displaced local people. But the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions Vice President Janet Peace says the United Nations is learning from its mistakes.
And then over time, we realize that you actually do have to do more, and you have to do more of this, and you have to really make sure you're not doing that. And then you got to have somebody actually check.
She says UN offset programs are now among the best available. But others compare buying carbon offsets to priests who sold indulgences. For a fee, your sins were forgiven. The critics consider carbon offsets a distraction from what they say should be the real aim, curtailing polluters' emissions. Imperial College lecturer Niall McDowell looks at the analogy differently.
So if you could actually commit a sin and then buy an indulgence and wipe it out, that does just get you back to zero, right? So isn't that okay?
Svenningsen adds that carbon offsets should be a last resort after polluters have done what they can to pollute less. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Paris.
Coming up, copper takes on respiratory germs. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
The biggest consumer of champagne is France, of course, but other markets are emerging in places such as the UK, Africa, the United Arab Emirates, and Japan. And consumers in these markets are not all the same. Vincent Perrin is the CEO of Comité Champagne.
The Japanese market is also very selective. They like small is beautiful in Japan, and they like the variety, the diversity of these very original wines. You have other markets in Europe.
The tightly regulated champagne industry is challenging suppliers to cultivate new ways to meet new demand, mostly in the export market. Once again, Vincent Perrin.
There is more and more research on the product itself to adapt this product to the new class of consumers all over the world.
South Africa's bubbling consumption spiked 22% in 2014 in what was a near-record year for champagne sales worldwide. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. The Syria-based Islamic State group is expanding its reach in Africa, courting Islamist extremists from Nigeria to Somalia. According to a top leader of U.S. Africa Command, Admiral Michael Franken, Islamic State is also establishing a major nerve center close to Europe. Admiral Franken spoke with VOA about where on the continent the U.S. is most focusing.
We emphasize five lines of effort. The first line of effort, think, go east, which is counter al-Shabaab, which is to bring about a more viable future in the violence-torn nation of Somalia. The second line of effort, think, Libya and the struggle with Daesh and Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb that extends over into Mali and the like. The third line of effort is containing Boko Haram and the scourge in the Lake Chad region, which has been the most violent of all terrorist groups in the last 5 years. The fourth line of effort is to truncate the unhelpful movement of goods, services, trafficking through the continent of goods and services, weapons, people, and drugs. The fifth line of effort is just frankly building partnership capacity and security so that African problems become African solutions done by Africaners.
Admiral Michael Frankin with the U.S. Africa Command. It's time now to check out trending stories online with our social media guru, G. Abby Lee. She's here with some colorful news today. Hi, G.
Hello, Ray. That's right. Pantone just released a color of the year for 2016, and for the first time in 15 years, the company released two shades for its color of the year, so technically they are colors of the year. They're called Rose Quartz and Serenity, so Ray, I'm sure you have the exact shades in your mind right now.
You know, these kind of sound like the names they give for colors of cars.
That's true.
But we're not talking about cars. We're actually talking about rose quartz, and I guess it must be some shade of pink.
Exactly. Rose quartz is pastel pink, and serenity is baby blue. The company said the two colors were chosen to convey rosy warmth and tranquility.
That's interesting news, but how is this relevant to someone who's not into fashion or just colors in general, of course, current company excluded?
Great question. So color of the year is applicable beyond shopping for clothes. Many industries need that information when it comes to launching a new product. So depending on the it color of the year, the companies could adjust the color selection of the items they manufacture and sell. So it could impact everything from paint, bedding to upholstery industries.
And, gee, how does Pantone choose this color of the year?
It actually begins with a nonprofit based in Alexandria, Virginia. The nonprofit CMG helps pick and predict colors for a number of products, and their members include, of course, Pantone employees. The CMG members gather throughout the year in a series of what's called Chroma Zone workshops throughout the world. Ray, I was quite surprised to learn that virtually everything can influence a selection of colors. We're talking pop culture, sports, technology, and even social issues. And before I go, I want to mention that Marsala was a color of the year for 2015, a reddish-brown shade. That's all for me today.
And no doubt makers of baby clothes are embracing next year's colors right now. Thanks, G. She tweets for our VOA International Edition Twitter account at VOA_IE and from her own account at G Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views, presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
This is VOA's International Edition. Doctors and hospitals are constantly battling respiratory viruses ranging from pneumonia and the common cold to a host of recently emerged viruses, including those responsible for the deadly illnesses MERS and SARS. Now, as we hear from VOA's Jessica Berman, doctors have a new way to battle these deadly infections.
Every year, an estimated 450 million people become infected with the virus that causes pneumonia. 4 million of them die. Viruses that cause other lung ailments, including MERS and SARS, also concern doctors because of their high mortality rate. One of the major ways diseases like these are transmitted, even more so than by sneezing, is through contaminated metal and plastic surfaces. People grab onto doorknobs, door plates, and handles or poles on trains and buses, and then touch their faces. But studies have shown that surfaces made of copper or a copper alloy destroys all of those microbes on contact. Bill Keevil, a microbiologist at Southampton University in England, is investigating the pathogen-destroying properties of copper metal. He points to studies comparing the effectiveness of copper surfaces in U.S. hospitals to the use of traditional hospital door handles and surfaces.
They found that copper alloys gave a 58% reduction in infection rate. So that showed, you know, that in the real world of a hospital environment, that copper alloys do a great job.
In a study published in the journal MBio, Keevil and colleagues report that copper surfaces can rapidly destroy coronavirus 229E, a pathogen which is responsible for the common cold and pneumonia and is closely related to the one that causes SARS and MERS. Keevil says copper ions, or electrically charged molecules, kill dangerous viruses by destroying their genetic material, both DNA and RNA.
Now, these ions are able to punch holes in the cell's membrane, enter the cell, and destroy their nucleic acid. So they're completely killed. There's no chance of mutation leading to resistance, and there's no coming back. So the chemistry is fantastic.
Keevil notes ancient civilizations knew about the antimicrobial properties of copper, even if they didn't understand the biology, as did people of earlier generations.
It's ironic in a way, because if you think back, you know, to the age of your grandparents and before, copper alloys such as brass were in everyday use in society. And then we developed stainless steel, chrome, plastics, and what have you. And we thought, hey, these are great modern materials. And so we ripped out a lot of the old brasswork. Maybe we were a little too clever.
Copper and copper alloys are a little more expensive than other materials. But Keevil says copper fixtures ultimately end up saving money because hospitals won't be paying as much to fight infections and for the drugs to treat them. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Country music fans have new music to hear from a new star. Or is he? Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald met with International Edition's Jim Stevenson to answer that question.
Chris Stapleton, Jim, is one of these 15-year overnight successes. You know, he comes out of nowhere. You'd never heard of him before. But, of course, he has a backstory. He is rising in 20th place on the Billboard Hot 100 pop singles chart with a song called Tennessee Whiskey. And his debut album, Traveler, is number one on the pop albums chart for a second straight week. Last week it re-entered at number one. This week it fends off Ellie Goulding, who opens in third place with Delirium. Of course, Ellie is a, you know, pretty good-sized pop star. Traveler debuted on the chart back in May. It opened in second place on the country list, number 14 on the pop list, and then it dropped off the chart entirely in September, and it seemed like Chris would just go on his way. However, on November 4th, Chris Stapleton was the man of the evening at the Country Music Association Awards. He was a big underdog, but he ended up winning Best Male Vocalist, Best New Artist, and Album of the Year. And maybe most importantly, he performed Tennessee Whiskey with Justin Timberlake, and they tore it up. It was a big viral hit, and people said, okay, who is this guy? And that's when they started investigating who Chris Stapleton was. Well, he's from Kentucky. He moved to Nashville way back in 2001. He's been in a bluegrass band. He's been in a southern rock band. And then he decided to go solo. So after all that time, earlier this year, he released Traveler. And now he has arrived. And Chris says he has no idea what's next. He says he's just going to keep on doing what he's been doing all this time. He's currently on tour here in the States. And he also has some UK and European dates coming up in March. The United States country music has a very large audience overseas. They love it in Europe. They love it in Australia. It travels well.
Chris Stapleton becoming a crossover star,
yeah.
which really broadens his horizons in so many ways.
It does, and it's significant, too, because what they call bro country has been very popular in the last few years. And these are sort of country rock songs talking about girls and pickup trucks and drinking beer. And they've come in for some abuse at the hands of traditional country fans who say, well, this isn't really country music. But people like Luke Bryan, for instance, are practitioners of this, and they're enormously popular. And the pendulum may be swinging a bit in the other direction, Chris Stapleton a bit more of a traditionalist. And so it's going to be very interesting if Chris carries some other like-minded artists in his wake. We'll see what happens.
Well, and the country music influence has been around for decades. I mean, we even saw it with bands going as far back as the Beatles being influenced by country music in the United States.
Oh, sure. Country music was there right from the beginning with Elvis Presley and the Sun Records performers. It's part and parcel of what makes rock and roll.
From the beginning and into the future, Ray McDonald, our Top 20 Countdown host, and you can also find him on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much for joining us, Ray.
All right, Jim. Thanks.
That'll do it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Barack Obama has called on the leaders of Turkey and Russia to de-escalate tensions following the downing of a Russian warplane by Turkey last month and to focus on the common threat posed by ISIL and the need to make progress on a political resolution in Syria. The president met with both leaders on the sidelines of the climate change summit in Paris. He expressed regret to Russian President Vladimir Putin over the loss of Russian life, while emphasizing the need to avoid steps that will hinder a political resolution to the Syrian conflict, a key step to defeating ISIL. In remarks after meeting with Turkish President Recep Erdogan, President Obama reiterated his commitment to the security of Turkey and praised Turkey for its generous support for the refugees fleeing the violence in Syria. President Obama expressed hope that in the coming months, Russia will see that using its military to prop up the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad will not succeed in ending the Syrian conflict. Apart from the moral question of the legitimacy of a leader who has killed hundreds of thousands of his own people, President Obama said, as a practical matter, it is impossible for Mr. Assad to bring that country together. I don't expect that you're going to see a 180-degree turn on the Russian strategy over the next several weeks, said President Obama. They have invested for years now in keeping Assad in power. That's going to take some time for them to change how they think about the issue. But President Obama said it is possible over the next several months that we see a shift in calculation in the Russians and a recognition that it's time to bring the civil war in Syria to a close. What can happen, said President Obama, is if the political process in Vienna aimed at ending the war continues to make progress, then we could see at least pockets of ceasefires in and around Syria. That may mean that certain opposition groups no longer find themselves subject to either Syrian or Russian bombing. They are then in a conversation about politics. And slowly, President Obama said, we then are able to get everybody's attention diverted to where it needs to be. And that is going after ISIL in a systematic way.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
for what's your